John just sent me a link to an article at CNN. May 7th, Congress looks at steel pennies, nickels. Congress is looking to change the composition of pennies and nickels because they cost too much to make. The article says the proposals are alternatives to what many consider a more pragmatic but politically impossible solution to the penny problem, getting rid of the penny altogether. Mint Director Edmund Moy said, "People still want pennies, which is why we're still making them." And Treasury Secretary Paulson acknowledged in a radio interview earlier this year that getting rid of the penny made sense, but wasn't politically doable. Well, when you come to think about it, nothing is doable by the politicians. Mad Money Machine. Show 110. First part of May. Hello, everybody. This is Paul Douglas Borger. Thank you for joining me on the Mad Money Machine Show 110, Planned Obsolescence. I'll be talking a little bit later in the show about planned obsolescence. Well, it doesn't appear that Congress or the Mint planned any obsolescence into the coins they made, now did they? They're going to keep around this penny forever, it looks like, whether it makes sense or not. Machine is proud to be sponsored by Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com. Pause the program right now. Take your browser over to IFA.com and sign up for an account with them. Let them help you manage your financial freedom. What could be more important? You've probably heard me talk about the best board games out at BoardGameGeek.com. We have two of them. The number one board game, the number one best ranked board game at BoardGameGeek.com is a game called Puerto Rico. And the number two game, which we have, is called Power Grid. And they're both intricate in the number of variables that you have to manage in order to try to win the game. Well, I wondered, out of some 4,460 games out at BoardGameGeek.com, what are the 10 worst ranked games out there? And of course, I went to the website, and I have a link to this on the show notes if you're curious about the details of any of these games. Coming in at number 10, the 4,450th ranked game is called the Worst Case Scenario Survival Game. And from the description, it asks, do you know how to escape from the trunk of a car? How to survive a shark attack? How to evade a forest fire? Etc., etc. Got a 4.04 ranking out of, I suppose, a 10 possible. Coming in at number 9, the 9th worst game is Cootie. Remember this one? You have the little plastic insect parts and you try to assemble your insect. Number 8. Oh, this one I really hate and we still have it and play it. Trouble! You have that die in the little plastic bubble and you snap it and move your pieces around the board back to home. 7, The Game of Life. Haven't played that one in a long time. Rated 3.85. 6, Candyland. 5, a game called LCR. For each L rolled, they give a chip to the player on the left. For each R rolled, they give a chip to the player on the right. For each C rolled, they put a chip in the middle of the table. For each dot rolled, nothing occurs. Oh, it sounds dreadful. The number 4 worst game, yes, it's available as a product, War. Oh, man, remember that card game? You just flip over cards and whoever's the higher card wins. Number 3, the 3rd worst game, Chutes and Ladders, originally called Snakes and Ladders. You either climb up the ladder or slide down the snake. Number 2, Bingo, which we played on the cruise ship and paid money to play, by the way. And the number 1 worst game at BoardGameGeek.com, coming in with a rating of 2.78, is Tic-Tac-Toe. Well, of those games, I think since Tic-Tac-Toe is not really a product, and Bingo, it's not so much a product either. Snakes and Ladders is the number one worst product you can buy as far as a board game. Now, some other notable games at the very bottom of the list at BoardGameGeek.com include Monopoly, ranked 4,432, and Battleship, 4,431. Well, if you think Monopoly and Battleship are great games, I really encourage you to go to BoardGameGeek.com and check out their list of the top games and just pick one at random and buy it. Spend 2 or 3 hours reading the rules and find some people to play it with. I know you'll have a fun time with it. People all around the world are tightening their budgets, and I am no exception. I decided I want to save some money on these recurring costs that we're paying. You know, I've complained about Verizon Fios, and they're charging me $214 a month for TV, internet, and telephone. And the telephone bill's what really got me upset. I was paying $35 a month until they came along, and now I'm paying $65 a month for local and long-distance phone service. So I got fed up, and I called Vonage. Yes, Kramer's Vonage the dog. And it is in the process of getting set up now, and I'm trying to transition my home number over to Vonage, and we're in the process of doing that. That should save us. I'm getting the cheapy plan at Vonage, which should save us $45 per month, a $20 package from Vonage. So I'm looking forward to that. And you know that people say, the quality is going to be horrible for you. You won't like it. Well, I don't care about the quality. I don't like talking on the phone anyway. What else I did at Verizon is I got rid of the sports package. We had some of those esoteric sports channels like Fox Atlantic and Goal and things we never watched. So that'll save $7 a month. And here's another one, and I'm not sure this is going to work out for me, but I called and canceled the Wall Street Journal. Can you believe that? A guy that does a financial podcast, a money podcast, is not going to... Oh, I don't know if this is going to work out. Because you know what? I'm up in the morning, and I'm looking out the window. Where's my paper? And I'm wondering right now, where is my paper this morning? Here it is, 8 o'clock. And I don't have my Wall Street Journal. And I don't know what I'm going to do after I get it canceled. But it's going to save me some $21, $22 a month. I'm hoping that I can read it online somehow. Yeah, I know it's a paid site, but apparently there's a way to go in through Dig and read the Wall Street Journal. We'll see how that works out. And I got to tell you, you know, I've sat down a couple of times and I said, all right, here, I'm going to start with the Wall Street Journal. And I'm going to make a note if there's anything at all that's interesting that I have read anywhere within the front and back pages of this thing. And there have been times where I have made it completely through the paper and said there was nothing that was, you know, that I couldn't have lived without having read in the paper. I'll let you know how that works out. I may be calling them at some point and saying, you know what, could you start my subscription over again? And we're eating in a lot more, I think, for two reasons, really. One is we want to save money. You know, every time we go to a restaurant, most restaurants, we're going to end up shelling out $40 a trip. Doesn't matter where we go. Most restaurants, we're going to end up spending $40 somehow or another. If we can eat in, you know, Costco has this frozen salmon. It's fantastic. Cook it up on the grill and just buy a couple of cans of vegetables and we can eat for like $5 or something. So that'll save a lot of money. And the second reason, of course, to eat in is it's 1,000% healthier than just about anything you can eat out. I mean, where can you go and order kale on the menu? Why can't you get kale at a restaurant? Kale is one of the best vegetables you can eat. What has our society come to when you can't eat healthy food when you go out to eat? I know it's the economics of it. People want the French fries. And French fries are cheap to make and expensive to sell. So saving money and eating healthy and maybe losing a pound or two of weight. I want you to go out to madmoneymachine.com website right now. I've got a posting in there from May 6th called Technical Analysis and Trend Following. And it starts out, there's a It says, I've got a question for you trend followers, you chart watchers, you technical traders. Have a look at this chart and tell me, is it time to buy or sell? And it's a chart of the S&P 500 index. It's actually over a two-year span. My chart doesn't give the exact dates shown on it, but it starts out at about 1,100. It goes down quickly, but then it goes up to almost 1,550. And then towards the end, though, it starts going down again, went all the way down to below 1,200, and suddenly it goes back up to 1,300. And that's where this chart ends. And I ask you, looks like the momentum on this baby is up, right? Time to buy? Well, here's how it worked out for you, and I show a second chart. From that 1,300 level, over the next 2 years, it went down and down and down and down to 850 on the index. Well, the first chart was roughly from May of 1998 through April of 2001. That was the big gain in the S&P 500 and then the drop, you know, after the year 2000. But it started going back up in April 2001. The second chart, though, was from April 2001 through March of 2003. Dreaded 2 years when the market went down and down and down. The trend definitely wasn't your friend if you thought we had bottomed in April 2001 and were headed for nothing but up. Ah, but then I show another chart. And if you look at the pattern on the third chart, it looks similar to the first chart. It starts out at about 1,300, goes down quickly to about 1,260, but then goes up and up and up and up to about 1,550. Ah, but near the end of the chart, it goes down to about 1,300 and back up quickly to 1,420. And that's where it ends on the chart. And I say, is there anything familiar looking about this chart? Is it the same chart as the top one? No. This third chart is from April 2006 to present. So this chart shows where we are at present. So do you think we've seen the bottom? Do you think in March we bottomed out in the S&P 500? Well, if you think that, revisit chart number 2, my friends. It is most certainly possible that the stock market can either go up, like a lot of people think, or go down. Well, let me conclude this little discussion of technical analysis and trend following by saying, I wish I had never seen a stock chart, and I wish I didn't have easy access to charts like I do now, because I get sucked into thinking that there must be patterns in prices like there are patterns in nature, and I'm always wrong when I think that. Now, there have been studies that have shown that there actually is some momentum in the markets, in prices, but I really don't think anyone can consistently profit from that momentum. And I show a fourth chart, and I think it's a better chart. If you must look at charts, you've got to look at this chart, and it's 20 years of IFA's Index Portfolio 100 from IFA.com. And it starts out 20 years ago at about a dollar, and today it's over $11. I'm just saying, set it and forget it for 20 years. Let's pull something out of the Mad Money Machine tool crib. Well, times are tough for a lot of people. I heard a story of a lady who sold her grandmother's teapot. It was an antique teapot that she kept as in memory of her grandmother, but she sold it recently for $6 in order to help buy gasoline. Well, this tool in the crib goes out to her and all of you that are trying to save some money. Coupons.com. That sounds like an advertisement, doesn't it? Well, you can actually go out and instead of looking through your Sunday paper for coupons, you can go to coupons.com and search for coupons of things that you actually do buy. Next time you go to the grocery store, go to coupons.com first, print out a few coupons, and then send me the savings. That's our Tool of the Crib for this week, coupons.com. And like most of the other tools I've given you so far, this one's free. Last Saturday, we all climbed into the van and drove the 6 or plus hours. We always stop at Cracker Barrel along the way, so it really takes 7 hours. To Huntington, West Virginia, to surprise my dad on his 70th birthday. A lot of people I hadn't seen in years showed up for this fantastic event. I put together a little slideshow. You know, I used some software from Microsoft, free software download, called Photo Story. And it's an amazing piece of software. If you ever have a birthday or some sort of tribute event, somebody's retiring or something, and you want to put together a collection of photographs to show in like a movie, you got to get Photo Story. It's a whole lot easier than using PowerPoint to do this. Photo Story, you download it to your computer. You go pick the photos that you want in your Photo Story. You rearrange them. You say next. It allows you to put titles to it if you want, or voice narration to it if you want. I didn't do all that. You can pick music. Now, it will create the music for you. You can pick a style and a tempo and a type of music, and it will create the music at exactly the duration of the show, and it saves it as a movie file. And you could actually upload this movie to YouTube if you wanted to, or you just play it in Windows Media Player. And that's what we did. We brought a projector, a computer, and we put this movie of photos in a loop and just kept showing it throughout the big 70th birthday party. April has come and gone, and that means an update to the Lazy Portfolio Smackdown at madmoneymachine.com/portfolios. We have a set of professional lazy portfolios that we're examining, and we have a set of Lazy Portfolio Smackdown game entries. We've got 67 entries into the game where we asked people, pick a lazy portfolio, in other words, a portfolio of index funds that you will just buy and hold, and at the end of this year, we're going to look and see which one of you took on the least amount of risk for the most amount of return. Right? And it's going to be in three bands, low, medium, and high risk. And whoever got the most return in that band of risk, or an easier way to say it is, who had the highest Sharpe ratio, will win some prizes. Well, let's look at the professionals. Now, last month, Harry Brown's permanent portfolio was the leader. This month, he is, year to date, he's up 0.6%. But the new leader this month is the old standby. I just can't believe this portfolio. Scott Burns' Six Ways from Sunday's portfolio. 2.5% gain year to date. Incredible. Of the game entries then, the leader, it's the one I put in. And of course, I won't award a prize to myself. But I added a portfolio called the Mr. Sharp portfolio. And you remember me talking about this. It's just simply three funds. I got the idea from looking at Scott Burns' Six Ways from Sunday portfolio, and I said, all right, if I take out his losers from his portfolio and just focus on the winners, what's the best data mining portfolio I can find that has the highest Sharpe ratio going back 10 years? And what I put together was a portfolio of just three funds, the Vanguard Energy, the Vanguard Precious Metals and Mining, and a international bond fund. And year to date, this thing's up an amazing 7.8%. And if you look at foliodex.com, it also has a very high Sharpe ratio. Well, so let's ignore me. Peter71 is the number two performer so far at 7% gain. His portfolio ID is 35. And if you click on the title there, individual entries, and scroll down and find number 35, you'll see that he's invested in exactly one fund. So much for diversification, right? It's the TIAA CREF Institutional Real Estate Securities Fund, TIREX. 100% in that fund. Good luck picking that single sector. Oh, by the way, January, February, and March, our leader in this game has been Mud Fud. Remember Mud Fud? He was in the China Bear Fund. And I say he with quotes. Well, where's Mudfud now? Negative 15.1% at the very bottom of the pick. And I must tell you, the number three entry in the game is Todd Good. And we know Todd from Waterfront Roasters, don't we? ID number 44 out there. He's got a pretty good diversified portfolio. 15% in the Vanguard Emerging Markets, 15% in World Energy Solutions, 15% in Vanguard Materials, 15% in Vanguard Intermediate Term Bonds, and 40% in Vanguard FTSE All World XUS Exchange Traded Fund. Congratulations, Todd, for being in third place. Congratulations to all of you, and good luck in the rest of 2008. I appreciate this email from Tim, and this email has some negative feedback for me, or negative comments, let's say, and I want to encourage any of you that have something to say negative about this show to definitely email me at feedback@madmoneymachine.com. The only way I can get better is to get your feedback and know what is stupid or doing wrong on the show. And so here is Tim's email. He says, Paul, I've listened to your last three podcasts and I really like your message. I do have some concerns, though. One and two. Number one, when I went to your website to browse and dig a little deeper on your philosophy, etc., the first thing I see is an ad for a stock trading robot at www.doublingstocks.com. I thought, that goes against Paul's philosophy. Why is that here? I went ahead and I clicked on it. No way I would fall for such tripe. Just wanted to see what was down the rabbit hole. And it takes you to an ad for the software two geeks designed that will make you millions. Even worse, it pops up ads and refuses to let you browse away from the site. I had to control, alt, delete, and kill Firefox to kill the site. What the heck? I don't click cancel or anything on those pop-ups. That's just a way for malware to find its way to your system. These ads and its products are 180 degrees out from your philosophy. What gives? What's more important to you, ad revenue or your message? All right, let me answer number one there. You know, those are Google ads, and Google ads are supposedly context sensitive. And in fact, they are. But Google ads aren't smart enough to know my philosophy versus stock trading philosophy. I do make, I would say, eating out money per month on Google ads. And so I don't really want to give that up. And for a lot of people, that is a way to show their support to me without actually sending me real money. You know, they go to my website, they click on a Google ad when they're there. And every time you click, man, that registers on the Google computers, and I get a couple nickels to rub together. And so I like having that out there. Number two, you appear to be a 100% IFA shill. Are you simply a very fancy ad for the company? With advertising being what it is, I wonder if you didn't start out with the sole aim of creating this podcast simply to generate advertising for the company. IFA info is all over your site. A large part of your material comes from the site. I guess that's okay if IFA is a quality product. Second question along this line, if IFA is constantly moving your money around in its profiles, what is that doing if not generating trade income for them? Don't misunderstand me. I'm all index funds and have been since I read A Random Walk a few years ago. I just wonder if IFA is preaching against actively managed funds while generating income from moving money around inside the portfolios. Maybe I'm missing something here, but I can create the same profile in most cases without paying IFA a dime, and that's what we want, right? To generate income at the lowest possible expense ratio. Well, Tim, I love this question because I've kind of been worried about whether people think that I'm just sort of some paid employee of IFA, and this is like a infomercial in disguise. And while it might sound like that at times, it is not the case. I am genuinely in love with the IFA product. I started out this podcast purely as a hobby. I thought maybe if I could get 250 people listening, it would be like my own private church, you know? And it turns out that I've been able to increase the audience far beyond that, and I'm just thrilled. I first started the podcast as a tribute to Kramer. I was ranking his stock picks and trying to show people how much more money you could make by following his stock picking advice. And the further I got into it, the more I realized that it's dumb to do that if you're really trying to invest your retirement money. On one show a long time ago, my tool in the crib was something at IFA.com. And they contacted me later and say, hey, I love the fact that you mentioned this on your program. And we eventually came to an arrangement where they would sponsor me. And that arrangement kept growing over time. And they got to the point where they are now the exclusive sponsor. I offered them the option to sponsor this show as the exclusive sponsor, which means I'm not going to go out and get ads from Vanguard or Fidelity or T. Rowe Price or whoever else. And it frees up my time from seeking other advertising income. And it gives them priority position in the show. And so it is a symbiotic relationship because, like I've said, I absolutely love what they're doing out there. The book clearly explains what is right and wrong in investing. And their website is just a mountain of useful information. And I'm just so thrilled to be able to get their message out in one other way. Now, as far as whether IFA is constantly moving money around in its profiles, no, no, no. What they're doing is, if you take a look at their index portfolios out there, they invest in something like a dozen different dimensional fund advisors, mutual funds, right? And so you start out, you give them your money, they decide what your risk capacity is. They might pick, let's say they pick a portfolio 70 for you, right? Medium high risk. They'll take your initial check into their account. They'll then invest that money into the 12 different DFA funds according to the proper ratio. They will, every year or every period, they will rebalance your portfolio for you. That's the only trading that's going around. And it's not like trading stocks. They're just going in and out of these mutual funds. And these are no load mutual funds. So you're not generating any kind of a sales fee or anything. You're not taking on a fee to buy and sell these funds. And the most important thing is they are there, and I say this not lightly, they are there to hold your hand through the good times and bad times like we're kind of in right now. Just like their philosophy says, we can't time the market. We don't know where the bottom is going to be when we don't know where the peaks are. They are going to invest your money according to your risk capacity. They're going to keep it there for however many years your risk capacity says to play out. Hopefully 10, 12, 20 years. And then you don't have to worry about your investments because they have it covered for you. Could you do it yourself? You could invest in some Vanguard funds. And I talk about Vanguard a lot, so I'm certainly not 100% IFA shill. But you could invest your money in Vanguard funds similar to the way they do in Dimensional Fund Advisors funds. But don't you think there are people that don't want to do that? Don't you think there are people that really could use the help from index fund advisors? And is it worth it to those people to pay the small fee that IFA asks? I mean, after all, if they're helping you, don't you expect they should be compensated for the help they're giving you? Of course. And finally, I do believe Dimensional Fund Advisors are the best fund family out there. And yes, that's better than Vanguard funds. Their funds are backed up by rich academic study, beginning with Fama and French, examining how risk and reward are related. And they've shown that small cap stocks over the very long term have a slight edge over large cap stocks, and value stocks over the very long term have a slight edge over growth stocks, and they invest accordingly. Another thing that Dimensional Fund Advisors does is they're not slaves to a particular index. They will take advantage of certain situations in the market, you know, buying stocks in very, very large blocks in order to get a discount on those stocks. For example, if some company is offering shares of stock in large chunks at a deep discount, Dimensional Fund Advisors will take advantage of that situation in adding shares to their index. And over the long term, they benefit accordingly. And Tim continues in his email, "Okay, that's it for now. I really do like the podcast and your message, but the website and your reliance on IFA seem to smother your message." Well, Tim, now that I've explained that, I hope you'll overlook that and come along for the ride with me. Thank you so much for the email. Again, anyone else that has something that's negative to say about the show like that, please give me a chance to answer it by sending it to me at feedback@madmoneymachine.com. Thank you so much. Razors are near and dear to my heart. Yes, not only for shaving my face, but also for shaving the sides of my head. I usually shave in the shower, and I've got a number of different razors. Yes, I tried that Gillette Fusion thing with all these blades going every which way, 5 on the front and 1 on the back, a battery in there to shake the thing while you're shaving. My goodness, how expensive are those replacement blades for that thing? I've had the 3-bladed thing, and I've had the double-bladed thing. Now, most of the razors that I get, these, even the cheapy ones these days, come with this lubricating strip on it. You know what I'm talking about? This little slick thing at the top of the razor blade. You know, it kind of puts a soapy, slimy feeling on your face when you shave with it. It makes your face slick feeling, I guess, when you first start out with this razor. But very quickly, I'd say within a week or two, that lubricating strip wears out, doesn't it? It's all gone from the razor, but the razor is still, it still cuts good, right? The razor still works. Well, you know what this is, my good friends. This, my very good friends, is called planned obsolescence. Yeah, look it up. Planned obsolescence. This is one of these gimmicks that is just a brilliant gimmick for the razor companies. Let's say, you know, they don't want to advertise how long-lasting their razors are, right? My goodness, if they made a long-lasting razor, in fact, there was one called the Infinity Razor, which was a true ripoff. But they don't want you thinking that their razors last for 6 months. They want you to buy a new razor every couple of weeks, don't they? Yet, they don't want their razor to get so dull that they pull the hair out of your chin. So this lubricating strip is an absolute brilliant idea. Let's make it so that, yeah, the razor blade itself doesn't wear down, but some other feature on the razor wears away so that you know it's an indicator to you that, hey, this razor's getting old. I should change it out. Well, don't fall for it, my friends. You keep shaving with that thing. These razors will last a couple of months at least, right? Well, what else has planned obsolescence built into it? You know, some toothbrushes now have a wear indicator color in the bristles. You've seen like a little blue colored bristles within the white bristles of your toothbrush. And they even make this a feature in the advertisement. It says the new Oral-B toothbrush now with wear indicator strips. Oh, great. Tells me when to buy a new toothbrush. Well, how long can I brush with a toothbrush? I could brush with the same toothbrush probably for 6 years, right? But no, the wear indicator strip tells me that I need a new one after only 3 or 4 months. I just wonder what else has planned obsolescence. Just imagine a car. A Lexus, for example, has a very high reliability. It always has a high reliability rating from people. And you want a car. You want your car to have a high reliability rating, don't you? So where do you put in the planned obsolescence? Well, the radio is a good place to start. Put in a radio that's not going to be future-proof. Put in a radio that you get down a couple of years and you say, huh, this thing's not iPod compatible, you know? Or you put in a GPS system with maps that aren't any good anymore after a few years. Or you put in some plastic in the thing somewhere that when it's subjected to sunlight, it fades really nasty looking. The car still works great, but that nasty piece of plastic in there tells you it's a signal. Every time you get in the car, oh, this car's getting old, you know? Yeah, I got an old car. Now, what about in the financial world? Do you think marketers have added planned obsolescence into their products? What do you think? With millions and millions and potentially billions of dollars at stake. Do you think the marketers at a mutual fund company have built in any planned obsolescence into their products? Today's hot fund might start stinking after a couple of years, right? A couple of years ago, investing in the China fund was hot. And they usually start advertising these things, of course, after the fund has seen some magnificent gains, right? They don't get you in at the beginning of it. In fact, they don't even create the fund sometimes until after a particular sector has had massive gains. And it becomes the hot thing. Well, they know that once everybody gets on the boat is full and they need to get you onto a new boat. And I'm sure they create a China fund with planned obsolescence in mind, saying, all right, now once we get people into this China fund, what are we going to get them off onto next? Maybe the India fund, or maybe the low price stock fund, or get them into some sort of managed account where we can trade stocks for them and have fun. I just wonder if the financial services industry incorporates planned obsolescence into their products. The antidote for you, set it and forget it. Index funds don't have planned obsolescence. They're designed for buy and hold. I want to thank you again and again and again for joining me here on the Mad Money Machine. Thanks for downloading to your iPod, your computer, or your Zune. This is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes avoiding planned obsolescence to make a Mad Money Machine. I'll see you next Friday. Please visit our sponsor, who we love, 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 love so much here at the Mad Money Machine, Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com. Place to start, risk capacity survey. Next place, if you've already invested somewhere, benchmark your portfolio with them. Compare how your portfolio did against their portfolios. I'm so confident that you'll find their portfolios beat yours that I want you to email me if I'm wrong. And I appreciate all your feedback, negative or positive, at feedback@madmanmachine.com or call the voicemail line 206-734-4763. That's Skype, by the way, Mad Money Machine out at Skype if you want to hook up with me. I have Mad Money Machine accounts at MySpace, at Facebook, and at Twitter. Sync up with me at all those places or make a comment in the show notes at the website madmoneymachine.com. Thanks so much, everybody. Stay invested. See you next week.